Oh, that's right. We are getting started here. Mika had a little car trouble getting here today, but how you doing today, Mika Childs?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you here. I tell you what, you are Republican running for Superintendent of Education.
That's right.
Having worked in the superintendent with Mick Zace and everything, I might ask, why do you want this job? I can understand people that have never been in this job, but you've worked there. Why would you like to be in that job?
Yes, you're right. I'm making my decision with my eyes wide open. Yeah, I've probably told people that one benefit of my experience is that you won't have to rely on the job training. I know what I'm getting into. The reason I want to do this because I think that it's important for us to elect a state superintendent who will put forward a clear vision for what our children need. We need to make sure that every child who graduates high school is ready for work or college and citizenship. And just as I look at the training I've had, as I look at the work experiences that I've been blessed to have, I know that I have the skills, I have the passion, and I have the training to be effective. And so I'm running for state superintendent of education. But yes, you're correct, it's not an easy job. Some people say it's a thankless task, but I do believe that fighting for our children's futures is important enough to take on this task.
Sure. And Mika, you when you were young, what did you think you wanted to be? I mean, you're still young, but when you were, 10, 11, 12, 13, what did you want to be?
Well, it's funny you asked that. The first job I remember wanting is to be a firefighter. And I remember taking a tour of the local fire department when I was in kindergarten. So, you know, there was a little bit of influence. But yeah, it ranged for me. I remember wanting to be an architect at one point in time. I had a stint time where I thought I might become a professional basketball player. But those of
you're
you
a little
met
short
me,
for that.
Yeah, I'm vertically challenged.
Yes, you are.
And while I had a devastating outside jump shot, I wasn't quite fast enough to make the cut. So I did have to pursue some other career ambitions. There's a point in time when I went off to college where I wanted to pursue medicine. However, once I got on the campus and I had an opportunity to think through really where my passions are, I knew that my heart was in education. My heart was in teaching. If I looked at the things I read about in my free time, what little free time I had, and also as I looked at the volunteer opportunities I took, my heart was in making sure that others benefited from the same sort of high quality, great educational experiences that I had. And so I chose, rather than pursue medicine, I actually chose to go into education. And I made that decision. It was during my freshman year in college.
Wow. Now, where did you go to school?
I went to Duke University. So I was educated here in South Carolina, grew up in West Columbia. My family's originally from Saluda County. And so my parents moved us over to West Columbia, where I went through schools, finished at Airport High School in Lexington School District 2, went away to Duke University, largely on scholarship.
Why Duke?
A couple of reasons. It goes back to when I was 12 years old.
Firefighter?
When I was 12, I decided I wanted to go to Duke, and it was for a couple of reasons. One, they had an outreach program called the TIP program, the Talent Identification Program. And while I qualified and would have been admitted, my parents weren't quite ready to send their only daughter all the way off to Durham. But I did read about the program, and I was impressed with Duke University from that moment. Then, shortly thereafter, Duke won not just one NCAA basketball championship.
Okay.
They won back-to-back, and being a basketball player, I thought that was great to have a school that had great basketball and great academics. Not in that order, of course, but that's what turned me on to Duke University. But they won the national championship, and I remember just watching the games and reading more and more about the school, and I was just impressed. And so I went for it, and fortunately I was blessed with the opportunity to go away to Duke University largely on scholarship.
That is pretty lucky, and I tell you what, having lived in North Carolina and everything, what a great area. I mean, there's all the different colleges in that area. You didn't lack for fun and entertainment, did you?
Yes.
You didn't lack?
I did not lack. I did take advantage of all the cultural experiences that I could. But I did have to also focus in on getting my work done because they expect you to go to class and do your schoolwork there at Duke University. So it was a great experience, and I was able to take advantage of many opportunities while I was there.
Absolutely. It's a great school. So then you decided, I guess, after you graduated, you came back, you wanted to teach?
Yes, I got my bachelor's in history, my license to teach, stayed on and got my master's degree in public policy, all at Duke University. Then I decided
you didn't want to leave that school, did you?
I did not. And I would say to you, it was solely about academics, but
no,
I'll admit that my senior year as an undergrad, we almost won a championship. I say we were robbed. Some people say we choked. You know,
what year was that?
This was in 99. And okay. So I watched our Devils almost win a championship, and I stayed on for graduate school for academic reasons, wink, wink. But I did get a chance to stay on for graduate school and watch Duke win a title, and then I was able to come on home in 2001. I started out in the classroom as a social studies teacher. I taught 6th and 7th grade social studies. I also coached girls basketball. I went from the classroom to the state house, where I joined Governor Mark Sanford's staff as an education policy advisor. I worked in the private sector, working with business and industry leaders, and there I saw the impact of education on workforce development firsthand. It's essential that we educate our children, not just so they benefit from all that our state has to offer, but it's mutually beneficial. It also means that we are going to have a skilled workforce so that we continue to grow and thrive as a state. I left the private sector, but while I was in the private sector, I did continue my public service. I served on the South Carolina Education Oversight Committee. That's one of the state-level education committees. There I voted against the adoption of the Common Core State Standards way back in 2010. I left the private sector, though, and came back over to the public sector when I joined General Zase's staff as a deputy state superintendent of education. And so I've had experiences both as a student in our system, as a teacher. I also worked in policy formation both at the district and at the state level. And so I believe I bring a vast array of experiences that have prepared me well to be the next state superintendent of education.
Yes, and you have quite a position papers written up here. I have waded through all of them, Mika. A couple of the points that I thought were very interesting. One of the things that gets overlooked a lot in schools today is civics.
Yes.
Old time. Well, we used to call it civics. Now they call it whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. But I now see the social studies civics end of it kind of comes together, doesn't it?
It does. And I mentioned the importance of preparing our children for work or college and citizenship. And when I'm referring to the citizenship, what I'm referring to is making sure that our children who are born citizens are prepared for civic engagement when they leave high school. Yes, it's important for us to teach them about government and the Constitution and economics, but I want to bring it home and make sure that we're preparing our children to civically engage even at the local level. Because if you think about things like sales tax, sales option taxes, if you look at property taxes, and all the array of decisions that are made at the local level that affect not just how you live and where you work, they affect your pocketbook.
Sure.
We need to make sure your wallet.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that our children understand what it means to be civically engaged and why it's an important thing for us to take advantage of as South Carolinians and as American citizens. So that's one of the things I speak to in my 10 and 10 series on our website, MikaChilds.com. That's MekaChilds. MikaChilds.com. On our issues tab, I have my 10 and 10 series. And there I expound a little bit beyond what are just the main
sure.
points of my platform. But overall, all that I want to do is gear towards making sure our children are prepared for work or college and for citizenship.
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent point, and that's one that's commonly forgot. The other point that I thought was very, I mean, not that there's not a lot of good points, but a couple that I picked out of just wanting to talk about is the soft social skills.
Yes.
That particularly as our young people grow up being engaged with computers, texting, all this kind of stuff, we're forgetting about how to communicate without having a phone in our hand.
And you're going to shock some of the younger folks out there to think that there's a way to communicate that doesn't entail texting people.
Right.
But look, we need to make sure that our children are prepared. And I lay out a 5-point platform, and one of the first points is to make sure that we bring accountability to our classroom. Our schools need to be accountable to children, and the South Carolina Department of Education needs to be accountable to taxpayers. And when I'm referring to the schools being accountable to children, one of the things I'm thinking about is kind of clearing the deck of all the things that we have going on in school, in schools, that distract us and prevent us from having time and space for our educators to address some of those soft skills. And so I think we need to reconsider how we are kind of divvying up all the time in school, focusing on this and focusing on that, and making sure that we are accomplishing those things that are very essential. And so when I'm talking about soft skills for hard work, I'm looking at those things such as a work ethic. Or good communication.
Oh, work ethic. Oh, wait a minute now, Mika. Let's not get carried away here this afternoon.
In my time working at the state level in particular, you know, I've had an opportunity to interact with business leaders, and I'm amazed at the growing number of people who don't have jobs. At the same time, we have all sorts of business leaders who are saying, I've got jobs, but I can't find people to fill them. But when you dig in on that, you'll see that what they're saying is there are people out there who are looking for jobs. But when you get down to things like, are they bringing a strong work ethic? Do they have good communication skills? Are they going to show up on time? I mean, these are things that seem unimportant, but when I'm talking to business and industry leaders, I see that that's part of something that we need to focus in on in education. So I want to, again, get back to making sure our kids have those academic skills that are important, but we also need to make sure they have those soft skills that are essential to being successful, not just at work. Those same sorts of skills are also important to be successful if our kids go on to pursue their associate's degree or get their industry certification, go into the military, or even go in to get their four-year bachelor's degree. Whatever you do in life, you're going to have a strong work ethic if you're going to be successful. You're going to need good communication skills.
Sure.
So there's a whole host of soft skills that I think we need to build back into what we're spending our time on in our classrooms.
We need to learn to be able to put the cell phone down. I mean, is what I think. But you're absolutely right. And particularly if you go to any of the job fairs that works as South Carolina does and everything. Having been at booths, we have two businesses, Sharp Facets and the radio business. Having been there and seeing people show up in inappropriate work clothes, people that think that they have to come out there because they have to sign off art, not because they want to, and they really don't understand the difference.
Right, and that's where we also need to address what is relevant to the second point of my platform. The first thing I mentioned is making sure we bring accountability to the classroom. Secondly, I also want to make sure we individualize education. I want to promote educational freedom. I want to support and I'll fight to support an array of options. One of them that we often forget about are apprenticeship programs. And that's in some ways an old thing that I think is coming back to fruition, because we're realizing that, and just what you're talking about, it's one thing to describe to a child what they'll need to be prepared to face when they leave school, but it's something altogether different when we can give them meaningful apprenticeship programs. And I count apprenticeship programs as one of many choices that we need to support to make sure our children are prepared when they leave. I support our traditional public schools. I also support charter schools and private schools. There are families who will choose to homeschool. We need to be supportive of those options. We need to support virtual school experiences and apprenticeships and whatever options are going to be necessary to make sure each child gets what they need in order to be prepared when they leave school. And I also believe we need to allow money to follow the child to the learning environment that their parents choose. So in addition to doing all we can to make sure we have real accountability in our classrooms, accountability to children, I want to promote school choice. Let's give our parents the educational freedoms they need so that we can really individualize education and not just talk about individualizing education.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we used to have a big program here in Greenwood was being able for high school students to work in businesses.
Yes.
And get credit for working in the business. We used to have lots of interns. Mm-hmm. Apprentice, whatever. It was good for them and it was good for us.
Right, and learning can take place in so many different areas. We don't need to limit it to just the classroom. You know, you're actually speaking to a third thing that I focus on, and that's the fact that I'll fight to improve opportunity and community engagement, because I know that some of the challenges our schools will face, they're not going to be able to solve on their own. So, yes, we need to hold the adults in the system accountable for the outcomes they're getting, But we also need to recognize that some of the challenges, we're going to need to rely on business and industry leaders to come to the table and help us provide those apprenticeship opportunities. When you're dealing with things like student discipline, we're going to need to rely on the faith-based community. Our parents play an important role in ensuring that our children come to school with the right mindset.
And we'll come back and talk more with Mika Childs. You stay tuned. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. Time for the news. We'll be back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. I'm Ann Eller, right back here with Mika Childs. Man, she's got a lot to talk about here today. We are going to be talking about a lot of it. You know, Mika, you know, when we're talking about philosophy and everything, one of the things that I saw in the news here is that in California, they're actually going back to the idea of the one-room schoolhouse. I can't believe this. What do you think?
Well, I'm a proponent of local control, so I do think that if that's something that the locals support, then we need to be open to it. What I do like about the idea is it gets us back to what I've been describing and bringing accountability back to the classroom. You see, we shouldn't advance students based on social promotion, advance them before they're ready. I believe that we should advance students as they master content. And my thinking is that these schools that are moving to a one-room school or one-classroom building, they're moving back in that direction of let's advance students as they're prepared. So really trying to figure out where a child is and promote them as they are prepared, which is a little different from what we typically do now. I wouldn't see that as something that we'd mandate at the state level.
No.
However, if it gets good outcomes and it's something that is palatable to our taxpayers, then I think it's worth considering, especially if we get more towards a model that I'm proposing, and that's a mastery-based model in terms of advancing students to next levels, next grades.
So in your plan here, do we want to call it grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, or are you saying level 1, 2, and 3?
Well, I think that'll be a subject of discussion. I'm watching what's happening in some other states that are moving away from seat time and moving more towards a competency or a mastery-based model. And one of the challenges is you may have a child who's 8 years old, but taking what we now call fifth grade math and taking third grade reading. Well, what grade do you say that child's in? You know, we can have a discussion about how those labels need to be set. I don't feel strongly one way or the other. The main thing is we need to really focus on advancing students as they actually master content. And the descriptors for grade levels, we can have a discussion about how that needs to look. And I do understand that as state superintendent, we will need to work collaboratively. And so as I'm having this discussion, I'm going to include district leaders who have a say in this. In fact, there are some district leaders who've already articulated an interest in having the flexibility to move to a mastery-based model. There are others who aren't fond of it. Main thing is I am a proponent of local control. I think the best approach for our state is to allow the sort of flexibility that would allow districts to move towards a mastery-based model, and then over time move the entire system in that direction as we have an opportunity to ferret out the sort of answers to questions that you're posing.
Sure. Now, you know, one other thing I want to bring up that was in the news, I don't know if you heard this story or not, but about a school that decided not to have an honors program because not all the children would get honors.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me it sounds a lot like the whole soccer trophies for everyone mentality. And people use soccer trophies. I'm not sure why soccer is a sport that people use. But in any case, that's kind of common parlance. Now, the way I look at it is this. Yes, we need to do all we can to build our children's self-esteem. But in my mind, nothing builds self-esteem like success. Why not do all we can to reward children who are improving? That's a way to honor those who are improving, but not necessarily, you know, the best player on the field or the best student in the classroom. There are all sorts of ways to address the self-esteem issue. but to move away from at least acknowledging the success of students, for me that presents a challenge because what that means is I think we will over time undermine whether or not our children really value hard work, whether they respect and respond well to competition. And in America, you know, competition is really what's made this country great. I don't think we need to undermine that in our schools.
I don't think so either. And I've never seen a sports team not want to win the game because the other team's going to lose.
Right. I mean, I've seen in some recreational leagues where they don't keep score, and that's fine if that's what they choose to pursue. But what always struck me was while there's no score on the board, the parents know who's winning the game. They're keeping tabs on the points and who's scored and how things are going. So it's just part of our natural tendency, and I think it's good. And depending on the age of the child, you know, there are things you can do to make sure it's an age-appropriate approach. But at the end of the day, hard work should be honored. Success should be honored, and we can be thoughtful in the way we do it, but I just wouldn't advocate for moving away from honoring success.
I agree with you. I agree 100%. I've had to compete all my life, Mika.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, nobody else, I couldn't look at anybody else. If I failed myself.
And you may think you're not competing. It just means you're not winning because other people are competing. So.
Yeah, there you go. You're absolutely right. Well, as a deputy superintendent with Mick Zace, you've seen the inside. Sounds like you've got the nuts and bolts on what you'd like to do and everything with the program.
Yes, ma'am.
But one of the things is the bureaucracy that at the Department of Education. It's huge, isn't it?
Oh, it's a large agency. And when you count the folks who are housed in Columbia and in others across the state, you're looking at about 900 employees. Unfortunately, under Dr. Zace's leadership, the numbers come down significantly. And that's a good thing in terms of finding efficiency so that we are good stewards over taxpayer resources. And so there's a balance that the agency needs to strike. But you're right, it's a large agency. It can get to be unwieldy, which is why you'll want to have someone who knows how to manage a large organization.
So you're up for that challenge too?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'm actually excited for it. I mean, look, you have some people who are just, they're eager to be unleashed with an opportunity to work hard and accomplish great things for our children. But because of inefficiencies that have existed in government, the South Carolina Department of Education included, sometimes we, because of the way we approach things, undermine whether or not people who are very effective actually are allowed to be as successful as they can be. And so I want to identify places where we can serve our children, serve our districts better, and make sure that as an agency, we're playing that support role that the agency is designed to play. And part of that's going to be continuing to address the culture of the South Carolina Department of Education. But I do commend those who are working hard and those who aren't focused on serving children, those who aren't focused on helping schools improve. You know, we're going to have a meaningful discussion about what that means, because I'm not going to have any tolerance for doing anything that isn't focused singularly on ensuring that our children are prepared for work or college and for citizenship.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the things that I think in today's world is particularly hard for parents, and we're always talking about the parent involvement
yes.
in the child's life, but it's hard for parents to know which direction to take their mm-hmm. child. Should they go to regular public school? Should they go to private school? Should they be in homeschooled? How do parents in today's world actually make that good decision?
I think part of it is going to be informing them better. I mean, one of the strengths of a vibrant marketplace is for consumers to have the information they need to make an informed decision so they can, in fact, make that good choice. When we're looking at educational freedom, an important component of it that often is not discussed, so I really appreciate this question, is making sure that we are sharing with parents the options that can exist, the options that do exist, and how they might figure out what is the best fit for their child. For example, I'll use homeschooling. I'm a supporter of homeschooling families. That choice is not for everyone, but those who choose to take that educational freedom, more power to them. I'm surprised, though, by how many people don't know that they can homeschool their children and don't understand what homeschooling entails. As I look at it, with all the educational freedoms that exist, the South Carolina Department of Education should be more proactive in providing information to parents so that they are empowered to make decisions and even demand more options. There are communities in our state that don't have charter schools. And many of the leaders aren't aware that they can come together and create their own public school. That's an absence or a lack of information. I think that's something that we can and should address. In fact,
there's plenty of public schools that don't really want those charter schools, do they?
And that's where it's good to rely on the local school districts to provide information. But I simply want to reinforce that and in some cases supplement it by providing resources that are easily accessible to parents and to local leaders, so that, you know, where there are options that don't exist, we have a clear path for knowing how those options can be created.
You know, one of the fears, I think, of public schools when we come to look at charter schools, private schools, and putting tax dollars that it follows the child, that X amount of dollars follows the child, a lot of public schools worry that the kids might not want to go there.
Well, I understand that concern, but my response is, if the parents are voting with their feet, if the parents are saying that the service you're providing is not something that they desire, then natural market forces will come to bear, and the traditional school that the parents are choosing.
That sounds like capitalism or, you know,
American
way.
Here I am in the United States of America talking about market forces. Oh, my. What am I thinking? Look, I think that choice in South Carolina will have the same impact it's had everywhere else where a vibrant educational marketplace has been allowed to come to fruition, to come to be. What you see happening is, yes, there's that initial period where some students leave. But I do want to be clear, I just haven't seen any places where there's been a mass exodus where a school loses so many children that they end up closing. I think that's in part because as school leaders realize that parents are making choices other than their school, mm-hmm. they begin to ask, well, what about the option is attracting the parents? And the
sure.
school leader responds and begins to make different decisions. I mean, it's just like in other industries and other markets where if your competitor is drawing your customers away, well, you can sit there and be angry and try to seek a government intervention to prevent it, or you can respond, you can compete, and you can attract your customers back. And our parents are not just customers, just consumers of educational products. But I do think that there's an appropriate way for us to allow the marketplace to allow education to improve. And part of that's going to be giving parents options. And as they start taking those options, school leaders across the board will respond. But I do think an important part of that is, let's make sure that as we are giving our parents educational freedoms, let's truly promote local control. You see, it's not fair for Washington, D.C. or Columbia, South Carolina to sit here and micromanage everything that's happening in a school and then say, well, why aren't you being successful? You can't dictate quality sitting in the Rutledge building. That's where the South Carolina Department of Education is housed. So my view is this. Let's really empower our local leaders with flexible spending, with real autonomy, and let the parents have real educational freedom. The two will balance out, because if a school leader finds himself in a position where parents are making other choices with real local control, then they will be able to actually respond and offer a high quality educational product.
God, turning education into a business.
That is part of it.
Yeah.
And I'm always careful, because I know sometimes people don't understand the educational marketplace, you know, they might get uncomfortable with the notion that education will be treated just as the marketplace it is. That does not indicate that we will be any less focused on meeting the needs of our children. Quite the contrary. Instead, what you'll see is a system that's not so focused on preserving programs and looking out for the interests of the adults in the system. Rather, you see schools that are able to focus on what their children need. So we need to stop trying to micromanage our schools from Columbia, and definitely not from Washington, D.C. We also need to provide our parents with real educational freedom, and the two combined will be powerful in doing more to serve our children better.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we are here with Mika Childs. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, then we'll be back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafé cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafé mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
That's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. We're talking about growing the next generation so they can work and be taxpayers, Mika. And, you know, it looks like that's what the federal government needs more than anything is more taxpayers, right?
Don't get me started on that.
But that is, it seems to be where they're going. You know, Common Core, it looks like, is going to be put out here in South Carolina.
Yes.
Looks like the House approved it, and it now is going to Governor Haley's desk. I'm pretty sure she's going to sign that. What do you think, though? Do we not need standards? What is the answer on that?
Well, I believe that we, and one of the things I'll fight for is to protect the powers enumerated to our state by eliminating federal overreach. That gets to your question about whether or not we need standards, and that, to me, speaks more broadly to the question of, well, what's the state's role in education? I believe that education is a matter best addressed by states, particularly parents, taxpayers, and our local leaders, also our educators. And to that end, we need to think about the role the state's playing. I don't think the state should try and micromanage what's happening in our classrooms. I do think it's appropriate for the state to set standards, so define some expectations, and hold schools and districts accountable for whether they meet those outcomes, whether they meet those expectations. But I don't think it's appropriate for the state to micromanage what goes on in between, setting the goals and holding schools and districts accountable for meeting the goals. Rather, I'm a proponent, I'm an advocate for real local control. And that's pushing the money out to the front line so that our school leaders can make the decisions based on what's best for children. We also will need educational freedom so our parents have options. But, you know, within this question of, well, what's the role of the state? Do we need standards? I do believe that academic standards are important, but they need to be very narrowly focused so that we can leave space to address things like soft skills and address those things that are also very important to preparing a child for work or college and citizenship. I think it's important that we not try and micromanage quality from Columbia, but rather, let's make sure we're hiring the very best leaders for our schools, the very best teachers for our classrooms, and let our local schools do their job. And if they aren't, then we can intervene. But just this whole concept of trying to micromanage our classrooms is not working. We need to acknowledge it and roll back some of those prescriptive regulations and laws that aren't getting the job done. And we definitely need to push back on what's coming from Washington, D.C. The way I do that is to make sure I'm having a very clear conversation with the South Carolina General Assembly, our governor, and also our congressional delegation to make sure we all are on the same page in knowing what we are doing in our schools driven by federal mandates so that we can decide as a state, you know, how are we going to handle this? How are we going to push back on federal overreach? Because they reach in our pockets, they coerce dollars from us, they take it up to Washington, D.C., and they do whatever they do up there, and then they say, if you want your money back, then you've got to do what we tell you to do. And I don't agree with that. Let's push back and get back to having our state-run education to the point of standards. You know, I'm glad to have voted against the adoption of the Common Core state standards back in 2010, and I look forward to, as the next state superintendent, helping to implement a new set of standards. And I'm excited that the General Assembly is taking action. I think it's an important move on their part, and look forward to working with them.
There's only one other state, right, that has unadopted Common Core. I believe it is Indiana or something.
And Alabama also has taken action, and a lot of states are looking at it because, you know, even with what I saw back in 2010, part of what we're now grappling with are challenges that you see upon implementation. There are concerns that are stemming from local decisions. There are concerns stemming from the impact we're now seeing on children. And so as those things are coming forward, it is appropriate under our state law, the Education Accountability Act, to take action and rewrite those standards. And I look forward to playing a leadership role in creating rigorous standards for our children, so we'll have South Carolina standards for South Carolina's children.
You know, one of the things I was reading in the story here, it says school districts have spent between $59.8 million and $88.2 million in supplies and training to implement the standards. That's a lot of money, Mika.
It is. And what I know, having played a role in governance, I understand that when the state makes a decision about standards, districts begin to comply with the law.
Right.
And they immediately begin working on retooling teachers so that they are prepared to implement the new standards. That's true of Common Core. That's true of every instance where we have redone our state standards. It does concern me when we have a kind of whipsaw approach to policy formation. I mean, if you think about it, we had the standards that were in place up through 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Then we redid the math and English standards in 2007, 2008. Then at the state level, we said, hey, let's do another set of standards in 2010. And so just that whole process of every few years changing standards, we need to solve the problems with Common Core, but then also make sure that we are cognizant of the fact that when the state makes a decision about standards, it's not just state dollars that are at play. Local dollars begin to get aligned to prepare schools to implement the standards. And that's something that I'm very sensitive to, because we need to make sure that our educators clearly know what standards are going to be implemented with any given school year. And we also need to make sure that we're providing strong transition planning as we're moving from one set of standards to another. But we need to stop with the whipsaw approach. Let's fix Common Core and then stay on a course of action that is a good one, a great one for our children.
Absolutely. Well, you are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. We are going to stay on the air a couple more minutes here because Mika has so much to talk about. And I just she got a late start here, so we are going to stay on a couple minutes more here. But I do want to announce, this is something that I've been asked to announce, and it is very important. Congratulations to Coach Kermit Smith and the Lander University baseball team. They want you to come out and show your support as the team departs for the College World Series in Cary, North Carolina, right up there where Duke is.
That's right.
They said join them tomorrow morning at 6:50 in the morning as we stand united at the Jeff May Sports Complex to line the sidewalks on either side of Montague Avenue. It says wear blue. Feel free to bring signs, banners, flags to show your support. So please go out and congratulations in a big, big way to our Bearcats right here in Greenwood. Go Bearcats. Be there 6:50 tomorrow morning. You know you're going to be up getting ready for work. You might as well just head on over there.
That's right.
Have your coffee and say a shout out to all of them going up there.
Yes.
It's important, isn't it?
It is. And we need to wish them good luck and all successes.
Absolutely. So they have had a phenomenal, phenomenal year, and we are just thrilled that they are headed up there to go to the College World Series. All right, Mika, a couple more questions that I have for you. Number one, we've talked a lot about soft skills and hard skills, but how do we, one of the things that you and I think we're talking about off air, is how not to let a student hit right up against that wall and then say, oh, we're going to do remediation and everything.
Right.
How do we take that into our own hands as educators and parents, et cetera?
Well, you know, I'm speaking from the perspective of someone who taught. I taught sixth grade and seventh grade social studies. And one of the things I remember from my very first year teaching is that moment when I realized why so many of my students were struggling. Many of them were not reading on grade level. Now, some of them were at grade level and above, but the ones who were struggling the most were often those who were in sixth grade, but were not reading at the sixth grade level. And so when I sent home homework assignments with them, it was very unlikely that they would be successful. Even as we were doing assignments in class, I saw the struggles they faced, and it alarmed me because I knew the content was only going to get more and more rigorous. What are they going to do? What are our plans? That's partly why I support the idea of making sure, one, that we're not advancing our children until they're ready, but also let's make sure that we have thresholds in place so that we aren't advancing children, especially past elementary school, before they've mastered reading, before they've mastered math numeracy. Those are some very important fundamental skills that they need to have, you know, soundly under their belt before they move on to secondary education, which starts in middle school. And so my thinking is that, yes, it's important to have some clear expectations, but please, let's not wait until our children hit third grade and say, oh, you don't read well, we're going to retain you, and give you the exact same educational service that you received the first time you went through third grade. I don't think that's going to serve our children well. Rather, what I think is important is that we do what some other states have done. If you look at Florida, which has implemented a model that I think is pretty good, they said you can't move past third grade until you are a strong reader. But what you saw happening at the local level is starting in kindergarten, and first grade, and second grade, schools rethinking how they intervene with children and offering real strong services so that you didn't wait until a child got to third grade. Instead, you made sure they were strong readers all along the way, so that initially they saw a rise in the number of kids who were retained, but that number came down significantly because the schools started really focusing on making sure their kids were mastering key skills. And they also did not hold a student back and just offer the exact same thing. And so, again, we need to have a thoughtful approach, because it does not serve our children well to advance them without their mastering content. I speak to this in my 10 and 10 series. One of my topics is how matriculation without mastery doesn't serve our children, doesn't serve our students. We are setting them up to fail if we advance them without ensuring that they've truly mastered content.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, you have to do that when you're in college, when you're all along, whether you're going to a technical school or, as you said, getting a bachelor's degree at a regular college. You know, and one of the things that I've seen that have been tremendous is the strides and what our technical colleges are able to do to get kids ready to work and get in the workforce. And manufacturing is so different today. You know, we had the mills here in Greenwood, and that was a dirty, nasty job. Not anymore. Manufacturing is totally different.
It is. And you're speaking to something that some are calling a manufacturing renaissance, where over the next several years, the trend towards offshoring jobs is going to essentially reverse, because what's happening is manufacturing jobs are becoming more and more high-tech, so more skilled jobs, that the incentive to send jobs overseas is changing. Well, what that means is we're going to have a tremendous opportunity, both in manufacturing but also in other industries, to prepare our children for some wonderful work opportunities. And what's fascinating is that many of these jobs, I think more than two-thirds of them, while they may require some training past high school, many of these high-end jobs that are going to pay well aren't going to necessarily require a bachelor's degree. Now, I love education. I went straight through high school, undergrad, graduate school. I would have stayed on for more, but decided I need to enter the workforce.
Or your parents did, one of the two.
Well, yeah, we won't talk about look, not everyone's like me. We have some kids who have a vision for what they'd like to accomplish in life, and it doesn't necessarily require a bachelor's degree. And it doesn't mean that they won't go back and get their bachelor's degree one day. But what it does mean is this. Let's make sure that we're really informing our children of all the great opportunities that are going to be available here in South Carolina, even across our country. When I look at manufacturing, agribusiness, tourism, the healthcare industry, IT or computer science, there are areas that are really high growth that, again, have jobs, some of which will require a bachelor's degree, but many of them will require an industry certification or an associate's degree. Let's make sure our children know what the options are. And let's be clear. I'm not talking about talking to 7-year-olds. I mean,
make up your mind today, kid, what you're going to do.
That's not what I'm describing. What I'm describing is, let's make sure our kids have the foundational skills as they're moving through elementary school and middle school. But as they turn towards high school years, let's make sure they're informed in making their decision. Because what I don't want is for a child, a young adult, to go into tons of debt, pursuing a degree that may or may not afford them with real career opportunities for today's world. Let's make sure that we are providing them with strong information so they can make great decisions. It should not be tracking. It cannot be educators in the system deciding, well, Johnny's good at this and Susie's good at that, so we'll track them in certain directions. No, what I envision is let's make sure our parents have the information they need, make sure the children have the information they need so they can truly have access to what will be necessary for them to pursue their lifelong ambitions.
And what's also dream.
Their dreams. And what's neat is, look, the careers our kids are choosing now, the kids who are coming out of school now, they're going to have 3, 4, 5, 7 different careers. I don't know what the right number is, but they're going to need to have the skills that will allow them to be agile in this marketplace.
So they're to be able to go back to school, to be able
correct.
To learn a new career possibly.
Yes. But I do want to commend our institutions of higher education, particularly our technical colleges, because I just remain fascinated with the powerful opportunities that they're offering young people. I mean, one of the things I've seen emerging are not just career and technology centers at our high schools, but also more and more schools, you know, they're charter schools that work with the technical colleges nearby so that we have young adults who are graduating high school, not just with their high school diploma,
but with
an industry certification or with an associate's degree so that, I mean, there are
options.
There's
all these bridge programs that are out there, yeah.
Those are the sort of choices that we need to promote, and at the starting point needs to be focusing on what's best for our children.
Absolutely. Well, Mika, I'll give you 2 minutes here to wind this up. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you. I certainly hope you have enjoyed the interview today. And we're going to let's hear what you got to say here to wind this up here today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. I've really enjoyed it. My name is Mika Childs. I'm a Republican candidate for State Superintendent of Education. We'd love to have your vote on June 10th. I'm running because I want to make sure that every child who graduates high school in our state is ready for work or college and for citizenship. And as your next state superintendent of education, I'll fight to bring accountability to our classrooms. I'll fight to individualize education by promoting real educational freedom and school choice. I'll fight to protect the powers enumerated to our state by eliminating federal overreach. I'll fight to attract the very best teachers for our students, because we all know if our children are going to receive high-quality instruction, we need great teachers leading our classrooms and strong principals leading our schools. I also fight to improve opportunity and community involvement, because I know that while we've got to hold the adults in the system accountable, many of the challenges our schools face they're not going to be able to address on their own. I'm proud to be a product of our schools, proud to be a native of South Carolina, and just really excited to be able to go and fight to make sure that our children are prepared for all the opportunities that will be available here in South Carolina and in our country. I ask for your vote on June 10th. Please tell others what I'm trying to accomplish. And I also ask that if you're willing, consider making an investment into my campaign. My website is simply MikaChilds.com. And if you have any troubles remembering, just remember that a vote for Mika Childs is a vote for our children. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. That was great. You know, I just in closing, one other point. You know, most children start school excited.
Yes.
And what happens is a travesty to all children. And so if we can create that excitement and keep them, you know, think about the ones where they pick up the telephone and all of a sudden they're playing with the computer on the phone and they're enjoying and they're excited. And we seem to put kids into school and somewhere along the way they just lose that spark and that enthusiasm.
Our brains, children's brains, are wired to learn. They want to know all about the world around them. We need to engage them in a way that will leverage that enthusiasm so that they will be prepared. But I agree with you. Our kids need to love learning, and we need to do a better job of making sure that what we're doing in education reinforces their passions, their energies, their God-given talents. And I'm committed to doing all I can to make sure that instead of killing their enthusiasm, we're building it, and so that they will go on to do what God's put them on this earth to do.
Absolutely. Mika Childs, Republican candidate for Superintendent of Education right here in Greenwood. Not in Greenwood. She's in Greenwood today, but for the state of South Carolina.
Here, yes.
Thank you so much for coming, Mika.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.